Everyone's financial journey comes with its ups and downs. Entrepreneur and investor David Ash has shared a few of those in his lifetime, from a bankruptcy filing in his late 20s to a period of financial freedom today. His book is called Simple Wealth, and he joins us now to talk about his six proven principles for financial freedom. David joins us from Surrey, British Columbia. Hello there.
Hello, Bruce.
You write that the truth is always simple. You have quite a story here. As I said, you filed for bankruptcy at 28 and you more than rebounded. What is the single most important lesson, life lesson, that informs your principles in this book?
I would say, Bruce, that financial intelligence is not to be confused with a high IQ or academic achievement.
Yeah.
That it's something that anybody can achieve no matter what their background or education or training.
You outlined six principles. I'm going to go through them just so that we can focus on two in particular. Save a percentage of all you earn, control your expenses, make money multiply, protect wealth from loss, own a home, increase your ability to earn. So those are the six. I want to focus on own a home because that is becoming increasingly difficult in major centers these days. The increase in home prices is way outpaced the increase in incomes. How do you contextualize that principle, knowing that many of our listeners live in places in which a home is simply not available for under $1 million?
Well, I mean, that's, of course, in the book, I make it clear that owning a home, that well-selected real estate, of course, is a great investment, but that owning a home is something that is very personal and might not work for everyone for a number of reasons. One of them might be the reason you've just described. Costs of real estate have become very high in some of our major centers relative to incomes. However, if someone is really set on the idea and their income is limited, a lot of people are being very creative and they're partnering with family members. We're seeing young people, often parents are sometimes bequeathing inheritances early to give their children down payments or equity necessary to buy a home. People are partnering with each other. And or if you really want to own a home, sometimes it's just a matter of changing location, moving out to the suburbs or someone further away. If you want to stay in a big city like a Vancouver or a Toronto and you don't have the income, then that's just something that you're going to have to postpone or perhaps not participate in.
Of the six, that is the one that really is the most deeply connected to privilege, right? Because most people statistically do not have parents who are able to cut the check for the down payment of 50 to 100 grand.
Correct. That's
now,
true.
You're a big believer in rental properties and rental income. Great idea in principle. The math can be really tough to make work, though, given the aforementioned crazy increase in the price of real estate. Rents have not kept pace with home prices in a lot of places, and the condo market has had a huge pullback in terms of the declining rent and in terms of the vacancy rate in some places tripling. How do you think through rental properties, knowing the market dynamics of today?
Bruce, real estate, like any other investment, it's always about well-selected real estate. I don't advocate buying any type of property for that purpose. So, I mean, it's a very careful study and an analysis comparing the cost of carrying to your income and your future capacity has to be done. And whether or not a person's prepared to do the work necessary to deal with the tenants and all the rest of it. I know many young people starting out who are enjoying the benefits of owning rental properties. It's a reach, it's a challenge, it's a sacrifice, but it's an investment in their future that they're willing to make, and it pays off in the long run.
I want to come back to the principle around increasing one's ability to earn. Tell us more about that. What are the levers that one can pull?
Well, whatever you do, it doesn't matter what you're doing for a living. I think always be looking for that next best opportunity in the context that you're currently in. If you're a street sweeper, be the best street sweeper you can be. Always look for ways to improve upon the income, the earning where you are at the time. And then also, I think it's important to always have your antenna up, looking for better opportunities elsewhere. And to always, of course, further educate yourself and take that chance on that new opportunity. Don't get stuck in a job that's going nowhere with very limited opportunity. Keep moving forward. Always look for ways to increase your ability to earn.
In the acknowledgments, you thank God, saying, you know, the richest friend you got is the richest friend you have. What role would you say your faith has played in your financial life?
Well, the role it plays, I think, has altered my perspective in terms of how I approach the management of my wealth from one of purely wealth for wealth's sake to one of stewardship, where the handling of the wealth and the way we use the wealth is done in a way that is consistent, hopefully, with the principles that we live by as people of faith.
Your mother was someone who dealt with mental health issues for a long period of time. You write about that in such a compelling and moving way in the book. Tell us a bit about that and how that is informed how you think about money and also how you think about philanthropy.
Yeah, my mother, as I mentioned in the book, passed away in 1999. She struggled with mental illness and died alone in a rooming house in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Of course, that shaped us, my brothers and I. And I think when you experience a traumatic event like that, you look at life through a different set of eyes. You see the people that you pass on the sidewalks that are panhandling differently. And of course, it marks you and has, in our case at least, given us a deeper appreciation for the challenges that people face, whether it's mental illness or drug addiction or just straight up homelessness. We were able to appreciate it and relate to it. So we invest a fair bit of time and energy in supporting those kinds of causes in our city and other cities around the world.
I mentioned that there are six principles. I went through them off the top. I said own a home is the one that's probably the hardest to wrap your mind around if your circumstances are tougher. But the rest really are, they transcend education and income bracket. If you could snap your fingers and change one behavior in society at large such that 32 million Canadians could embrace the principles that you have outlined, what would it be?
It would be to embrace that people would be embrace the idea of short-term sacrifice for long-term gain, to understand that they can achieve, most of us think that we can achieve a lot more in a year than we can, and we underestimate how much we can achieve in 10 or 20 years. So an appreciation for the idea that a short-term sacrifice really does provide you with a long-term gain, and to take joy, find a joy in taking that.
David, thank you for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Bruce. Really appreciate you having me.